You are listening to Ruminations of Red Rum, a production of the Ruminations Radio Network.
And welcome back, folks, to another episode of Ruminations of Red Rum. Brendan here. And we have another special episode for you. That's right. We're just treating you all so well this year. We had the wonderful, amazing opportunity to sit down with some of the fine folks from Monster Makeup. It's a film collective, and they have a few films out there. Saint Drogo, which is a film that I saw on the festival circuit last year. I've talked about it quite a few times on the show. It's fantastic. In their first film, Death Drop Gorgeous, which is a very fun, campy, very bloody, giallo-ish film. And it's fantastic. Both of these films are fantastic. So happy to be able to sit down with some of the, like I said, some of the people of Monster Makeup. We have Mike Ahern, Ryan Miller, and Brandon Paris. I had an extremely fun conversation with them, and I think you will all enjoy it. So please enjoy. So first of all, I have to thank you all for just taking the time to sit down in chat. I first became aware of you guys, and now it is pronounced Drogo, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
you're right. That's how I've been saying it, and then I was like, "Shit, what's wrong?" So I became aware of your movie when Sean Parker from Horror Obsessive, he relentlessly talked about it in our Discord chat for I think like 2 weeks after he saw it at Salem. So I can't remember which festival I got to see it in, but I was so pumped. I immediately went and watched your first film, Death Drop Gorgeous, after that. So first, I just want to say congratulations on an amazing film, amazing two films.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate that a lot. Thank you.
You have, I think the right word to describe it is almost a collective Monster Makeup. Would you consider it a collective?
Yeah, that's the phrase we're using, I guess. I don't know how else to describe it. It's just basically like five friends being silly, stupid.
How did Monster Makeup come to be? Like, what started all this madness?
Yeah, I mean, when we started writing Death Drop Gorgeous, it was me, Brandon, Chris Delphi, one of the co-creators. And then we looped in Ryan and then Wayne, who plays the lead. And after Death Drop just kind of like started snowballing into like a bigger thing than we ever thought it would be. And so when it started getting kind of legit, we were like, we should probably form like a company or something or come up with a name for us. Because for a while we were just like the Death Drop Boys, like around Providence. Like that would just be the name that was used. I was like, that's not like that fun of a name. So it kind of, yeah, after we became serious filmmakers, we decided to come with a company.
And then Kevin Bowden ended up joining for Drogo 2. So now we're a six piece.
Yeah, now we're a six piece.
did anyone go to film school out of curiosity?
No, I think Brandon, you did some editing stuff, and I believe, but yeah, none of us went to official film school.
So what was it that made you want to make a movie? Let alone two.
I don't know. I ask myself that every day. No, I think Brandon and I met at a bar like way, way back, and we just kept in touch and talked about horror a lot. And part of my like. At the time I was pretty uninterested in the horror movies that were coming out. Like I'm not going to say the year cause I don't want to slight the horror movies that were out at the time, but
that's fair.
I just remember being like, these are all really lame. And then like Brandon was kind of talking about an idea that him and Chris had. And I was like, we should just like try or do it or write it for fun. At the very least, like, let's write a script. And I think it kind of started from there.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And then after we did Death Drop, like I said, after it like sort of snowballed into a bigger thing, like when we were writing it and they were like, well, I guess we're gonna have to film it too. And then we started filming it. We're like, oh, it'll go on up on YouTube or something. And then like we ended up on Shudder, which is insane. And so after we did that, we were like, well, we have to do another one. And we actually wrote a different script before St. Drogo. It was during COVID. I live with Brandon and Ryan. And we were like locked up and we just started writing. And so, yeah, we decided we wanted to do it again.
The other script we're actually working on now, we're currently in the fundraising phase, which is our least favorite phase, but it can be fun. So we're still trying to raise money for that. It's called Queen of the Rats, and hopefully start filming soon.
You're beating me to some of my questions here. I like it. real quick, before we get into talking about the funding aspect, just out of curiosity, could you guys all tell me your favorite horror movie? Or at least or if you don't have a favorite, maybe a comfort horror movie?
Hellraiser 1 and 2 are mine. Favorite movie and favorite comfort movie. I'm a huge Clive Barker fan. I just love the fuck out of those two movies.
One of my favorites, if not favorite, is Rosemary's Baby. I just love it as a film. The acting, the story, everything. I've seen it many times and I'm always down to watch it again.
Yeah, I also love Rosemary's Baby. I think I always switch my answer just for fun. right now, Alien is my favorite horror movie. Perfection, just perfection front to back.
For the Ryan and Mike, for the two Rosemary's Babies fans on the show right now, I've been seeing some stuff online going around about people are trying to fan cast Sydney Sweeney in a Rosemary's Baby remake. Curious as your thoughts on that.
I'm so old that I feel like I just found out who she was like last week. So I honestly don't think I've seen her in anything, so I can't speak to
it. I don't think I have either.
Yeah, I didn't know about that because I'm also like out of the loop with a lot of things being old as well. So I'm not sure I have a good really response to that, but I will have to look into that and maybe form an opinion.
I watched Jonathan Glazer's Birth a few weeks ago, and Nicole Kidman has the same Rosemary's Baby hair. It's not exactly like Rosemary's Baby, but it has very similar energy. It's such a bizarre movie. I highly recommend it. I wouldn't call it a horror movie, but there's definitely some Rosemary's Baby like undertones, and she has the same haircut.
I like the sound of that. So kind of getting into the funding of your next film, you're doing something, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's called Dial Drag for Murder?
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, James Michael from Horror Press was telling me about that. So what exactly is that? And if people are interested in helping fund your next film, where can they find that?
Oh, that's really sweet of you to ask. So Dial Drag for Murder, for both our two films, for Death Drop Gorgeous and St. Drogo, and now this third one, part of our budgeting is we have to fundraise for it and crowdsource. Mm-hmm. And so that's usually a combination of like a formal sort of Indiegogo type of ask. And then we also throw events locally to try to raise some money. So we've done like an interactive murder mystery in the past. We've done drag shows. And so Dial Drag for Murder this time is, if you've seen the show Traitors, which is on Peacock, it's like the game Werewolf, if you've ever played Werewolf. So we're kind of doing that, but live and with drag queens.
Okay.
Yeah. We had our first night last night, actually. It went really well. It was really chaotic, but also really funny. And we had a good turnout for a Monday night.
Believe it or not, drag performers make for good personalities in this sort of competitive reality TV format type thing. They're just, at first we were like, I mean, we knew their big personalities, so like we were pretty hopeful that it would go well. But then there's parts of the game where they're just sort of sitting around making accusations and like deliberating about who they think like the secret bad guys are. And, you know, are like, oh, it's going to be 20 minutes. I hope they're just not like boring and have nothing to say. And then it's like right off the bat, it was like, all right, first of all, and they just start, they just don't stop screaming for like the next like 30 minutes. So yeah, I'd say it was a success.
Yeah, good. I think eventually, sorry, there's the second part of your question. I was going to say, we haven't started a formal Indiegogo yet for Queen of the Rats, but we'll definitely post it to our socials at some point, hopefully in the coming months. But if anyone listening is like some rich producer sugar daddy or something, you can always reach out to us. Our DMs are open.
And our wallet.
And I... is it true that that your next film is a Lovecraftian detective film?
Not so much detective film, but definitely a Lovecraftian, some Lovecraftian elements.
Okay.
It takes place in the early thousands in Providence, Rhode Island. It's another Providence movie. We have this neighboring town called Olneyville, and back in the early thousands and late 90s, there was a huge thriving warehouse scene where a bunch of artists and musicians lived in these buildings, and they'd have shows and parties and they all lived there. And it was kind of like co-op style, but these buildings were awesome. A lot of them were kind of like illegally owned by like the mafia and the kind of, I think there's some laundering going on and stuff like that. So the movie's kind of, the main character is a noise rock band from that scene, and then the mafia, and then this giant cosmic horror.
Oh, I love it. Based on especially Mike, your performance in Death Drop Gorgeous, I would be interesting to see if you play one of the mafia members. It's a very different character than Saint Drogo, I would say.
yeah, that's my range. I'm actually playing one of the band members, which will be fun. We have Brandon's actually playing one of the mafia, though. 22 Fingers, it's basically a stone's throw away. Yeah, it's fun. It's gonna be tonally kind of between the two movies. So like definitely not as bleak as Saint Drogo, but not as like ridiculous as Death Drop. It's still like, it's almost like a nice marry of the two energies. I think it's gonna be good.
So you've somewhat answered this question a little bit, but interested to hear a little bit further. With Death Drop Gorgeous, you proved that you could. And also, I'm looking down because my notes are down here. I just realized that. So with Death Drop Gorgeous, you guys proved that you could conceive a project, see it through to completion, make it look surprisingly well for what I assume was a micro budget. And hell, you even ended up with Shudder. So did you find it any easier for the fundraising side of Saint Drogo to have Death Drop Gorgeous in your back pocket, or was it still kind of a task to get money around?
I think I would say it was a little easier. I think we kind of, and like you were saying, like we kind of proved ourselves. Like I think when we were doing Death Drop, we had to convince a lot of people to give us money, sort of, and be like, no, like we're gonna do it. And I feel like because we did it, and because more people like fell in love with Death Drop Gorgeous and saw what we could do, I feel like we reached our like Indiegogo goal pretty quickly, actually.
Oh, okay.
And because we had thrown so many events too, and people had come to our events and had a good time, I think like there's an understanding that if you're going to come to a monster makeup event, it's going to be a good time. It's going to be like something you're not seeing around the city. So I feel like it was a little easier. There's like new challenges, of course, came up, but I think funding wise, I would say it was a little easier to get it.
Yeah, I think it was like roughly around a similar amount of money, but I think it was, I remember like just in the first couple of days of fundraising, it was like we were already, you know, at like half of our goal or whatever. Oh, wow. And yeah, I think like Mike said, we already had people that believed in us, and we'd amassed a following that we didn't have when we first started Death Drop. So
Yeah, I think when we were first filming Death Drop, I think people were like, oh yeah, I guess I'll donate to your little movie. Like, that's just some like silly thing we were doing around town. It kind of was, but then like Mike had said, it kind of snowballed. Like it was going way, way better than we thought it was going to go. And like people were like giving it their all in the performances. Like Peyton was just incredible. I feel like the performance that Peyton gave, we couldn't do her wrong. So we wanted to make something a little bit more higher brow and higher quality than I think we were setting out to do.
I promise I'm going to get into movie specific questions soon. I have so many questions written down. I'm trying to figure out which ones to pick as we go.
Whatever you want to, whatever. Yeah. Being asked questions.
Everyone that I've spoken with that loves Death Drop, they, even the people that say, yeah, Death Drop was fine, they loved Saint Drogo. Did it surprise you with, maybe you can answer this twofold. One, how did you get involved? Your first film was Shudder. And two, were you kind of surprised with how incredibly well your second film was received based on your grassroots first film?
Yeah, for Death Drop, and I don't think you can do this anymore, the landscape certainly has changed in just a couple of years for us, but I literally just DM'd Sam at Shudder. It was like, hey, this is probably not the way you're supposed to do these things, but we have this movie, like a John Waters drag queen slasher. We can send you a screener if you're interested. And we did. And then we didn't, he responded and he was like, yeah, sure. And he gave us his email and he didn't respond. We didn't hear back from him for a little bit. And I guess I didn't think it was going to go anywhere. I was just like, whatever, mm-hmm. Like we're just trying what we can. And he got back to us and we had a Zoom call with him and he like really loved it and was like, I would love to have this for Shudder. And that was, yeah, that's how we got there. Think you can do that anymore. But I don't know. I think it was like that weird time where like COVID was still happening and like all was, I don't know. It was like kind of a crazy time.
Kind of like a right place, right time type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely was. And I think Shudder was in that like phase where they're just like acquiring mm-hmm. and like growing, and I think since the AMC cuts and that stuff happened, they're a little more specific now with their selections. When the reception between the two movies, it's we deliberately chose to like do a different kind of movie, and I was pretty nervous because I think like the things that people loved about Death Drop, we were kind of like, we're not going to do that anymore. Like, we're going to do those things that you all love. We're going to do something sadder and bleaker. So I think it took some folks by surprise, or it was a little like, oh, this is not what I was expecting, I guess, which was fun for me. I don't know. I don't know.
I think that also, like, the fear, like, Death Drop's a very certain type of movie, and all of our fans up to that point had been because they're fans of movies like Death Drop Gorgeous, mm-hmm. and they like comedy or they like campiness and that sort of thing. And so I think there was a fear that it was like, as I was editing it and like we're putting it together, that it's like, man, this is like really sad. I remember we watched like the first cut of it after I had like edited everything. And because of the way, especially I think like Chris Barnes, who scored the film, like the sort of score that he gave us and the musical selections and like everything and the content, it's just, I remember watching it and Brandon also was surprised and like, wow, like this is a lot sadder than I thought it would be. And so I was a little concerned that like people would just be like, man, this is a bummer. Like, why'd you guys make this? But it has been nice to see that the response has been that like, you know, overwhelmingly positive. And people who were fans of the first one, we've even had, you know, some people say like, oh, but I actually like Saint Drogo better. Which is really, really cool to hear. So, yeah.
I think too, like, since our movies are kind of a group effort, you're taking all different tastes and styles and ideas and combining them together. Where I think guys were Death Drop, like, horror comedy is not my favorite. And I think I don't want to speak for other people, but like a big chunk of our group do like that kind of thing. I'm not opposed to it. It's super fun to write and make, but my heart is in that kind of like folk horror and like just dark, like weird supernatural horror. And I think we kind of wanted to jump on, you know, try something like that out and see how it goes.
That's fair. All right, the last non-specific movie-related question. So after the festivals, I think it's fair to say you guys did a little bit of a roadshow. You went to some specific locations, screened your film. How did that idea of a roadshow come to be? And I would assume that was a fun experience. How did that differ from your festival experience?
So I think like the landscape right now is really, really difficult for micro budget indie filmmakers. There's a lot of gatekeeping. There's a lot of like actual theaters you have to rent out as a micro budget indie film, but yet they'll pay big studio or big budget films for their movies. There's this weird like kind of landscape where it's like, how the hell do I get my movie seen? It's one thing to like watch a movie at home, but it's like, you know, when you make a movie, it's so much more fun to see it in a theater. And like, we kind of wanted to do like what a band does and kind of go on the road, like with your product. And I think you're going to start seeing a lot more filmmakers doing this. I think it's kind of like all we have left as indie filmmakers to do. We lucked out with actually getting into a few places with our connections from Death Drop and the San Drogo, but like we've played in bars, we've played in just kind of random venues. We've hopped on to nights at indie theaters that have like a horror movie night that they, you know, we're able to like show our film, and actually they ended up paying us. So like we kind of want to be a part of people that are doing things like that, because I think this is like that symbiosis you have of creating a local scene, like a local horror scene, and then also like supporting indie filmmakers and micro budget filmmakers, which I just feel like we're not getting any love or any help these days. So you gotta kind of have to push yourself and, you know, take matters into your own hands and go on the road.
Yeah, I mean, just going along with that, like I think it's really just been about reaching out and trying to form like a network of people who are like good people who are really excited about indie horror and want to help out. And that's where like a lot of the sort of advantages that we've gotten have come from. Like we were just in DC, I think Mary Beth McAndrews, right, who works for Dread Central, she was able to get a spot for us at Alamo Drafthouse there, which was an amazing theater. It's an awesome place. And one of the cool things about on the road, going to these sorts of events is that people are specifically choosing to come to see your film. Like sometimes you are in festivals, a festival is just like a mix of like a lot of different things. And so people are like, all right, I'll stay and watch this. And so like, it may or may not be their cup of tea. Maybe they're like, whoa, this is like, you know, really gross or not what I wanted. Whereas like whenever people actually are buying a ticket to go see your film, when you're traveling, it's like, they already kind of know that they want to see this, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So I think the response has been great because of that. And we've met a lot of awesome people. And I think it is, just finding the venues where we actually can afford to go and that like want to have us. Because like some theaters, it'll be $1,000 to rent out the theater.
It's like a Thursday at 4 p.m.
Right. And it's like, and even if you're taking all of ticket sales, you still have to sell like 100 plus tickets, which is like much more than any theaters you normally going to have on like a random Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that makes it prohibitive in some respects. But then sometimes we luck out because of awesome people that are able to like accommodate us for a lot cheaper. So, yeah.
There's a few specific questions before we get into St. Drogo about Death Drop. Regarding the very excellent drag names, so my first question is, did you guys come up with the drag names? And I have a statement. I would like to pitch free of charge a drag name that I came up with, and I've tweeted this 3 times, and Twitter sucks now, so nobody sees it, and I would like to just put this drag name out there, get some thoughts on it. First name is Rhonda. Last name is Santis.
Yeah. So how is that not already? Like,
I mean, I would be surprised if it wasn't taken already, but I hadn't seen it anywhere, and yeah. I thought it was a fun name.
That's a good one.
Patriotic queen.
Well, she's a busty one, I can tell.
Yeah.
With those white boots.
Yeah. Or the pleasers.
Pleasers.
Six shooters at the hips.
Yeah, I think we came up with all the drag names in Death Drop. Yeah, I think the only one we didn't was Janet Fitness.
Oh, yeah.
Which was already her drag name. And then the other ones we made up. Drag names are so weird now, though. This is how I'm getting old. Sorry, I sound like drag names now. I watch Drag Race, or I'll put on Drag Race or try to catch up, whatever, with the season. And it's either like three random names, like, I don't know, like India Baby Doll, like
Sapphire or something.
Sapphire Fox. Yeah. It's either like three, four names, or it's just like the word like soap. Like, there's no in between. It's either these extravagant, like, drag, Southern
dynasties drag, and houses and family names, and like,
yeah,
and
hyphenated like names, and like, or it's just like a random, like, Brussels sprout.
Yeah. It's like they just gave up. They're just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Milk.
It's like, well, yeah. Oh, yeah, what did you come up with? How did you come with your drag name? Oh, I just like Brussels sprouts. It's like, the art of drag name is dead, is what I think.
Where did the idea for this movie come from? I mean, you did kind of say that people called you around town the Death Drop Boys. So the name kind of tracks for the movie, but can you kind of talk about like the inception of the idea behind Death Drop?
Sure. Kind of came from me and Chris Dolpe, the other creator. We were just chatting about how dangerous the sex apps are, and like how gay men, like, when they're horny, just will overlook red flags and go meet people like behind a dumpster and like at 4 a.m. in like a shopping plaza, and just like ran, you know, it's like those apps are just essentially made for serial killers, so you can lure people to wherever you want quite easily. So we kind of were, you know, joking about that, and we brought the idea up like almost a year later to Mike, and we kind of like chatted about it, and then, you know, created an entire script out of it. I'm not sure how. And then incorporated some other elements to it. We started adding like the drag queens and this, you know, the Providence nightlife and the older queens versus younger queens, which was like an actual situation happening. Yeah, it's kind of grew its own legs and went from there.
Yeah, it definitely did.
Real quick, I just want to just piggyback off that question, and then Mike, the floor is yours. I was curious as to what people on IMDb thought of your movies, and I'm sure you guys have probably scoured that. And Brandon, you make a very interesting point: the old versus new, the real drama that was happening. One of the reviews, and I wrote some of it down, and it was kind of, it seemed like it was written by a real piece of shit. But one of the words that they used to describe Death Drop was mean, and it's interesting to hear you say that was kind of a real thing that was going on, because if you're thinking, if a viewer watches that and thinks it's mean, like, yeah, but based on what you're saying, it was actually happening.
Oh yeah. Well, even like just like there's like the ageism, the gap between the generations, all the infighting, the race, the, like the casual racism and some not so casual racism, the transphobia, like all that stuff like exists. So it's funny, like when you depict this on screen, people get really butthurt about it, but it happens in real life all around us all the time. So it's just funny. It's like, yeah, it's contained in this film. All of a sudden it's like, oh, it's mean, I hate it, blah, blah, blah. And you guys are self-loathing. We hear that one all the time too. But it's like, I think you're a little freaked out that we're shining a magnifying glass on this. Mm-hmm. It's creeping you out for some reason, and you're kind of deflecting by saying we're being mean. But we're just you know, showing you what reality looks like.
There's also like, you know how in a timeline it's like BC and AD, like for drag, it's like when Drag Race like was invented, and then like there's before Drag Race. And so there's like this huge divide, and it's a little now just taken. A lot of folks that do drag now do drag because they saw Drag Race, which is fine. But like RuPaul's Drag Race done fucked up drag. Like, it's just such a different world. So you have like these queens that were doing it when it was like dangerous. There used to be this law in Rhode Island where drag queens, when they left the bar or the club to go to their next gig or whatever, they had to have 3 articles of clothing that were men's clothing on. Otherwise they would get arrested. So they'd have to put on like a man's coat, like a baseball, whatever. And so there's this whole generation that were doing drag that didn't do it because they wanted to be famous. They just did it because it was like, they enjoyed it. And it was like often tied to community fundraising. It was often for like a good cause. And now it's this other generation that's just very much like, this is my like fast route to get famous. And not all of them, I'm not saying like every single person that does drag now wants that, but by and large, I feel like a majority of them want to. So we see that divide in Providence, or we have seen it. We all work in the nightlife, or all have worked in the nightlife, the queer nightlife here. So it was just something we saw as time went on, and we thought it was a good like sort of conflict to include in the script.
And that makes me very sad to hear, because I think one of the things that I appreciate most about Death Drop, besides the fucking crazy practicals, which we're going to get into in a second, I felt very moved by Gloria, even though she is, spoiler alert people, sorry, even though she is technically one of the, again, spoiler, two antagonists in the film, I did feel bad for her. And hearing you guys kind of go into that history that I was not privy to, it makes me appreciate Death Drop more than I already did. So thank you for going into all that.
I definitely think the sympathy that is garnered through Gloria is definitely like mostly in part to Peyton St. James. Like Gloria Hole is definitely just a monster on the page, but I feel like Peyton really brought a dimension to her that really caused, like, made us feel for, I mean, we cared about Gloria for sure. And like, we kind of justify her actions
yeah.
some way. So we all, but like Peyton, yeah, just really, really knocked out of the park. And she's like such a talent. So I think that also is in part why Gloria is, you know, a sympathetic villain.
And we've seen this type of downfall live. I don't want to name any of the queens, but like there was like that older generation of pageant queens that, you know, have been doing drag in Providence and, or neighboring cities since the 80s. And then like them trying to cohabitate this world with all these younger queens that are up and coming that can dance and do splits and death drops. It's not this old Hollywood drag. I remember like some of the older queens were getting asked to host some of these nights at like the more like rambunctious clubs, and like the younger kids, it was not clicking, and it was really awkward and kind of sad. And like when those queens were asked to not do that anymore, it was really sad. And then you just kind of never saw them again. You see them at like a drag brunch here and there, or like a fundraising event, but it was kind of heartbreaking. And these were people I used to work with, back in the day. I used to work under one of the older drag queens in 2003, a few of the queens actually. And then you just saw them kind of just get pushed out and just not booked, and you know, it sucks.
Okay, sorry. All right. Let's talk about some of the practicals. We just got very deep there. Yeah. Now let's talk about blood. So the kills in Death Drop are fucking brutal. I mean, you started off with a dick in a meat grinder, which I don't think I've ever seen done before. Knowing that you guys just kind of threw yourselves into this movie, did you have it in mind from the beginning that you wanted practicals, you wanted everything to look gnarly and raw and authentic? What was kind of the process behind these gnarly practicals?
I think it's like we're all just like pretty big horror fans, and I think like a lot of my favorite movies are a lot of the 80s slashers, which had a lot of like the Tom Savini effects and all practical effects. And a lot of these movies are not good, but the rewatchability comes from the practical effects and just kind of how fun some of the bad writing is. And I think like we know this, and we kind of wanted to make something that could be like immortalized and have rewatchability. Even if you hate the story, like people will go back and watch the practical effects. Mm-hmm. And even as like horror fans ourselves, like that's what we enjoy. Like I love the practical effects. They're great. They just look so much better on camera. They're always look better on camera. And it's fun to like watch the actual special effects artists create this stuff and how they work and how it's magic. It's really, really cool. You see these slasher films come out all the time, and it's just there's off screen kills. The kills are boring, but they still maintain that bad kind of corny writing and paper thin plot. So I'm just curious, is like, why would anyone want to go back and watch this? It's just another movie get lost with the ages. So I'm always curious when filmmakers are in this arena don't do that. I'm not saying every movie has to have a gore in it, but you better have some strong writing and cinematography if you're going to do like a bloodless, goreless horror movie. Like Rosemary's Baby pulls it off.
And again, I've kind of already dropped this spoiler, so it's fine. But the killer's reveal at the end is fantastic. I was completely taken aback by tragedy. I actually, you know, while I sympathize with Gloria, I was like, oh, tragedy, you bitch. did you have that specific killer reveal in mind when you started writing it, or did you find the killer as you went along?
I feel like we had it. We have this whole weird backstory for tragedy. So I feel like we have more backstory for tragedy than we do for any other character in that movie. And I feel like it was always going to also be her, right?
Yeah.
We always knew it was Gloria, and we always knew we wanted Gloria to get away. But yeah, I forget when we decided, like, oh, tragedy told her about the blood magic.
Well, because we're trying to, like, how would she have figured out this blood magic? And so we kind of had tragedy written as this, like, possibly, like, centuries old, like, almost like Aaliyah from Queen of the Damned-esque kind of Queen of the Empire thing going on. I think at one point we had her, she survived, like, a
plane crash. Yeah. We had this really, she was a French model once. Yeah. Like, we really thought about this. So she has this long other life in which, she's done blood magic for centuries. And she also felt a deep sympathy for Gloria and decided to show her some magic.
She's become like our fan favorite too. Like, even in Drogo, like, we've had people ask at festivals, like, oh wait, is that tragedy? Like, so she's a, people always mention her online.
Wait,
too.
Oh my God. Like, is it? No way.
The butler in the mansion that you briefly see for like 2 seconds. Oh. That's tragedy.
the second you were saying that she popped right into my mind. Oh my God. I love it. So there's kind of a monster makeup extended universe, maybe?
Oh, yeah. There's a little bit of a universe there, yeah.
He's going to come back for the third one as well. For another little wink and a nod.
There's also like a, I don't know that I'll ever do this, but there's like a crossover Saint Drogo Death Drop crossover sort of idea that I would love to do at some point, to really bring the universe together.
Oh, I love it. Last question for Death Drop before we get into Saint Drogo. And Brandon, this is more geared towards you. You have met an untimely demise in both of the films that you've made. Are we going to see this as a running theme? Every movie, you're just going to, you guys are going to find a new way to just destroy you.
I think the reason is, like, it's just, I hate putting actors through this shit. Like, Sean, that's in Death Trap. We have a pretty awful death for him. And, in Queen of the Rats, I already feel bad putting him through what we're going to do. So I just feel like it's like, if it's our movie, like, I wasn't even going to play, me and Mike were even going to play those characters in Drogo, but due to like COVID restrictions, we kind of figured it'd be easier for us just to take those roles.
Okay.
We have people read for them and stuff, but I think it's just easier because it's like it's complicated. It's super uncomfortable. It's gross. I feel like I might as well just like do it so no one else has to like fucking deal with that. Like, getting my head molded was such an unpleasant experience. I'm not even claustrophobic, and it was a lot.
for a micro budget film, that head cast looked better than some like million 1.2 budget horror films. I was incredibly impressed.
Oh, thank you. That's all Joe Castro. He's a master.
Yeah, he's done some really great head casts. We had seen a couple of them that he had done on his page. When we were first talking to him, and we're like, yeah, we need to have him do one of these.
Okay, so I have some questions about Saint Drogo, and I just realized it's fitting. I have my Cornhill Beach mug here. As I was writing it, I realized this might sound like a slight, and I do not mean that. So if it does, please know there's no intention. It's okay.
It is.
P-Town is, it's fun. It's gorgeous. When you're there in the summer, it's just an excellent place to be. So you decide to replace these bustling warm streets with cold and snow, a side that most people don't get to see out there. And this is where I thought the slight might sound like it comes in. In my opinion, I think that you guys did what Ryan Murphy tried to do, but he failed at. Because I don't want it to sound like I'm making you guys... I don't want it to sound like I'm saying you guys are copying him, because this is a completely different entity.
We'll take that.
Not at all. No, you're fine. Yeah, it's funny. We agree. No, I'm just kidding. actually, kind of funny story. We wrote this. We were so excited to shoot it. We were planning our days for P-Town, and then we learned about Ryan Murphy doing an American Horror Story in P-Town. And we were just like we had like a moment of like, it's sort of the same thing. Like, oh my God, are we just going to get like eclipsed by it? Are people going to think we copied him? Yet whatever. And then we like watched it. Like, this is,
and so it was shit.
It was so bad. It was just, okay, like no worries. Everything's fine. It was funny because we were filming the first one. We were filming St. Drogo. They were also filming in P-Town. And so,
oh, no way.
Yeah, we didn't see them ever, but all the townies just assumed that's who we were. They just like let us do whatever we wanted, and they thought we were the American Horror Story crew, even though we're a crew of like five people, which is not the amount. Anyway, it was really funny. We would hear them, like, oh, that's the American Horror Story people, and like it'd just be like us three and Kevin with his camera. You know what I mean? It was like this big crew. So that was kind of funny, but
yeah. They must be out getting B-roll or something. Like, who knows? Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I remember having a little bit of anxiety when we first heard about it, because our script was already written. We were already like getting ready to start or starting filming when we first heard about it. And then it was like, and then when I first started watching it, I mean, also like their elements, obviously he chose the off season. Mm-hmm. I think we portrayed it a little bit better.
I would agree. The color in that show.
Yeah. Like, the washed out like color grading that they use, I was not a huge fan of. But then like there were elements of the story, you know, that were had some similarities with like a drug and things like that. And it was like, oh God. But then once I kept watching it, it was like, oh yeah, like of course everything but the kitchen sink is thrown into this, and then it's like gets crazy and yeah.
In that first episode too, there's a drone shot that we use that's literally the same shot they used in that one too. So we're like, oh my fucking God. It's like right over this like main stretch of road. It was so random.
They're like, oh, they're driving to P-Town.
But it's like in that same, like, oh yeah. I was like, Jesus.
I do believe in this like weird, creative, collective unconscious thing. Like, it's kind of freaks me out sometimes. Like, I swear to you, I had an idea about two men living in a lighthouse like way before The Lighthouse, and it was like kind of upsetting. I was like, fucking stupid Robert Eggers.
I had an idea for a movie called Zombie Tsunami, and then like three, four months later, the Sci-Fi Channel came out with Zombie Tidal Wave, and I was like, all right, well, fuck me then. Like,
but that sounds way better.
Yeah.
Zombie Tsunami is so much better of a name.
Yeah.
Like,
it also makes me be like, why wasn't someone in the room like,
yes, we could do a lot better than Tidal Wave. Yeah.
Oh shit. What made you guys want to use P-Town as a setting? And I guess also kind of wrapping around that question, where did the idea for this story come from? Because like you've all said, this St. Drogo is a very different animal than Death Drop in almost every regard.
Yeah. I think the first thing is we wanted to change genre. Like, I knew that we knew that we didn't want to do another horror comedy or like Death Drop 2, as fun as that would be. And we're all from, not all. Me and Brandon are from New England. Ryan's from Oklahoma, but has lived here for a very long time. So we're very familiar with P-Town, particularly in the summer, what most folks know P-Town as. And I went there in the winter like years and years ago, and I was the contrast was so, it was just so stark, and it was also really depressing. It's a little different now because a lot of folks now go in there in the winter and more things are open, but at the time I was going, like, one bar would be open, the CVS would be open, and a gas station, and that would be like it. And the townies, like the folks live there year round, like really struggled, especially without out of work, boredom, drug usage. And it was just, it just felt like a setting that was like rife with, it was just a great backdrop. Like, and when we were trying to figure out what we wanted to do or write next after Queen of the Rats, I had like talked about this setting with Brandon and Ryan. And I was like, I think, I don't know what the story is, but there's like a story here somewhere in this town in the off season. And I think Brandon kind of went with that from there.
Yeah. We had also talked about doing some kind of like folk horror or kind of like, fantasy horror kind of thing too. And then, came up with the idea of this Drogo story about, we want to have some kind of central monster or deity. Instead of going with a demon, like we decided to go with a saint. Saints are just as bizarre in their mythologies and folklore as demons are. And it's kind of fun. And we kind of wanted to like, we were going to put a little bit of social commentary in our movies, and we wanted to talk about kind of just this erasure of queer spaces due to gentrification and just and rich people kind of destroying it. Mm-hmm. And since we know P-Town very well, I mean, it's since we did choose P-Town, but it's kind of a microcosm as to what's happening in a lot of these queer cities and spaces that are just kind of just becoming another mixed city USA, and it's losing anything queer or magical about it. And P-Town's not 100% there yet, but it's like it's hitting the ground running into that direction as fast as it can. It's only affordable for a certain demographic of people for the most part. I mean, obviously you can get some deals here and there, but during the summer, like, forget about it. And that's not how it used to be there. It used to be a lot different. Like, you know, I'm 42. I've been going there since early thousands, and it was used to be cheap back then. It was really cool. There's mom and pop shops everywhere. It just seemed like there's more of a community feel there. But then as the years progressed, and I think Airbnb kind of was the nail in the coffin, it just decimated that place. You see that in Boys Town, you see that in any kind of like cool queer area. It's the cool spot, and then the wrong people move in and just kind of take over. So you want to kind of use that, like what happens in Drogo, as like an allegory for that.
And that same sort of like capitalist hellscape that's been produced has sort of fed into the sort of like drug problem that we also see there. That's not just there in other parts of the country as well, but like that really is an issue on the Cape, like especially in the off season, in small towns, and you know, especially among lower class people who are there, it's really difficult. And so it's like all those elements we wanted to sort of like feed together into one script and see how can we like add in some like horror fantasy elements to sort of tell the story and like bind it together.
So. At the root of all like folk tales or mythologies, they're all kind of for the most part like cautionary tales. I think the nice part about why myths and these folk tales are so immortal, they're just really fun and well written and compact and concise. I think that's like, that makes a good cautionary tale. So we want to just kind of emulate that and make a fun, scary creature to, you know, scare people.
All right. Well, that was a lot better of an answer than I was expecting. Sorry, I lost my track, my place. That was I appreciate that you guys care about this stuff, and your responses show that you're not just in it to, you know, to strike it big and stuff. Because I would assume that being an independent filmmaker is very tough emotionally, financially. It sounds like it can weigh heavily on your soul, and you guys have such a positive outlook on the messages of your film rather than I think you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to want to do it to do it. Cause it's not like you're raking in the dough. it's a lot of self-sacrifice. It's a lot of, asking for favors. It's a lot of just really like pushing yourself and having to, you know, have jobs outside of this and like, you know, kind of creating these really intense schedules where you're working a lot. And then like, where do we slide in writing time? Where do we slide in fundraising time? Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially nowadays too, it's there's less and less grants available for filmmakers, and the grants that do exist, now everyone's gunning for those. And it's a lot. So it's really, really tough. And writing grants takes a lot of time. So it's a lot. So it's one of those careers, and I mean, those hobbies, like you really have to want to do it to do it. Because there's a lot of work for the payoff, and sometimes the payoff isn't really that great. But
yeah. But I mean, I think it's rewarding enough that like so many different types of ways that keeps us, you know, going. Like it's one of those things too where like, I don't know, it's I think there's also a part of it where, you know, they say with like pregnancy and like not being a person with a uterus, I cannot like really speak to this, but at least like, you know, the myth is that like people forget about the pain of pregnancy, and that like allows them to help like have more children later because I forget like how horrible it was. The brain sort of like helps you forget. And I feel like it's sort of that same thing with like movie making too, where it's like, in part of me in retrospect, when we made Death Drop, I'm like, if I knew that it was going to take like 5 years, I would never like have done this. But I'm really glad we did. And then we start the new one and it's like, oh yeah, like this is really grueling. Like I forgot about how bad this is. But it's, like, it's also really fun at the same time, like being with all your friends and going and like, for a weekend and like shooting. And yes, it's frustrating at times and you're like get upset and you're tired, but then like when you look back on like what you created and like what you do, what you did, it's worth it.
Yeah, the shooting days are super fun. I think that's part of why we do it too. It's just, it's a blast.
They're so weirdly tiring. Like it's like kind of, it's like bizarre. Like we'll be in a single room just standing or even sitting. We'll be shooting this scene for a couple hours and I'll be exhausted. I'm like, I just sat here for like, why am I so tired? And I think it's just because we're such a small crew, we're all, not only are we like trying to remember our lines if we have the lines, we also are just like a five-man team that's doing lights, sound, camera, directing, acting. So I think it's just like you're using so much of your brain that like by the time it's over, I'm just like, I sleep like a baby. But yeah.
So there's, and this might just be a personal opinion, but I think that there's no point in making films if you don't learn and become a better craftsman through each film that you make. And it is abundantly clear that from Death Drop Gorgeous, that Death Drop Gorgeous was a learning experience. Saint Drogo is, it's cleaner, it's tighter, it's more focused. What were there any specific lessons I'm not shitting on Death Drop. I don't want it to sound like that. Were there any, you know, lessons that you learned from making the first film that helped kind of make Saint Drogo, I'm not going to say an easier experience, cause I'm not saying that it was an easy experience, but it helped you along the way kind of.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the one you kind of mentioned, tighter, with Death Drop, when we were writing it, we were just kind of making each other laugh. Like we were just throwing anything and everything in there, you know, like it wasn't like, let's think about the like plot point one and how we break into act two. You know what I mean? Like we weren't thinking about that. We were just like having a blast. And so I think with the one thing we learned after Death Drop that we wanted to do for Saint Drogo was like, this just needs to be more concise. This needs to be streamlined. No random character side plots. Like we're just gonna, it's gonna be one plot, it's gonna be pretty clean and like lean. And that was one of the things we wanted to try to do. So yeah, that was one of the lessons.
We have like our we're gonna have a Blu-ray coming out, so hopefully like late April, May, June, somewhere in there. And we were chatting about like, do we even have deleted scenes? And in Drogo, we have zero deleted scenes. Like we were really deliberate about everything we did. We're with Death Drop. I think we have how many deleted scenes on that TV?
Like 10 or
and, like long, like full day, like shooting day scenes too. So that
there's
was like,
there's whole plots we moved out of Death Drop.
Yeah.
We had like a Lord of the Rings cut of Death Drop and we're like, we should probably down.
It's like 2 hours and 36 minutes is okay, right? I mean, it's like, yeah. I mean, nowadays maybe it's like with everything being like 3 hours or whatever, but not for like a, you know, $30,000 movie, I guess.
When we first did the script for Death Drop, it was 140 pages long, which at that point, I guess we weren't following the minute per page rule. And then we curbed that. And then for Drogo, I think our script is 74 pages long. So we did half
of that. I remember sitting down and being like so happy when, because like I was editing it and I was like, all right, we're going to have, you know, we were aiming originally, like always kind of wanted it to be a tight, shorter feature length film. And so we were always like, all right, maybe around like 70 to 80 minutes somewhere in there. And so at one point I started thinking like, oh, it's probably going to be about 2 hours and I'm still going to have to like edit out like 30 minutes or something like that. But then I was kind of editing as we shot scenes and as we went, and so I got closer to the end, I was like, wait, like this is looking really good. And so like finally I finished it and like the first cut, it's like 78 minutes or whatever. And I was like, oh my God, like know, if I do have to change anything, it's not because of the length, which was like such a good feeling, because it took forever, like months, to edit, re-edit Death Drop, because you had like 45 minutes of footage that you needed to remove. So now you're talking about, like Mike said, like important whole plot elements or characters or things that have to get rearranged and reworked because you're like chipping away at a story and you don't want it to just become unintelligible. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, not having to do that was a big relief.
you had mentioned a physical release. Where, when that comes out, where can people find that?
I think we're probably going to do like a Big Cartel website thing, is my guess, or probably through our own website too. We'll have all that linked in there. Yeah. We'll probably be meeting about that soon too. We're pretty psyched on that.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're going to be like selfish distributing mostly with St. Drogo. So, yeah, we'll probably be posting about it a bunch.
Awesome. I'm not going to take up too much more of your time.
You're fine.
But so this is maybe something you guys haven't seen. There's been a lot of recent discourse, and it's mainly from Gen Z and regarding sex in films. A lot of Gen Z people say that there's no need for sex in films. I believe the sex in St. Drogo is justified. It helps chronicle Caleb's kind of descent into culty madness type things. I think the answer here is fairly clear, but do you guys think that sex needs to be justified in a film, or it's just kind of fair game?
I think it's a human function, and it's a mammalian function. And I think it's, if you're showing people eating in a film, if you're showing people getting killed in a film, if you're showing any of these things, they're like human things that happen. So this whole weird discourse about why it's like problematic to have sex scenes is really bizarre to me. I don't know if it's coming from like this hyper like crypto fascist backlash we're having right now in our country, if it's having some weird subconscious effect on our youth that like sex is a scary taboo thing, and like, I've seen a lot of this stuff on Twitter too. I personally don't get it. But if you're going to go by that metric, then they have to justify any other human function that happens in a film that doesn't need to be there. Like, so I think everyone should be sitting in a white room talking to each other. Like, I don't understand. Like,
I also think from like a similar perspective that like nothing needs to be justified exactly. in a film. Yeah. Like as a form of like artistic medium, you know, it's not a computer algorithm where you have to justify like the logic of a line of code. It's like an art form. And I don't think you really can justify like any particular image or, you know, piece of music or whatever that somebody chooses to include in a film. Mm-hmm. And of course, like there's reasons why people do it. And there can be various reasons, you know, people can use it as like a way of like giving you a glimpse into a person's personality or the connection between two people, or like you said in St. Drogo, it's like this is a very common thing. Like sex is a form of like currency and also manipulation that is often used, and this is like being used, you know, in that instance as well with Caleb and Adrian. So yeah, I don't know. It's just a really weird, like, there's very few like sex scenes where I personally ever had that feeling or thought when I'm watching in a film that I'm like, why is this here? I'm just like, all right, it's part of the movie. Like, not a big deal, but that's my
opinion. Yeah, I don't know if I'm just like super depraved or something, but I just like never am I. It's like, if a movie shows me a nude body, if there's a sex scene, I'm just like, never does it cross my mind that I'm like, that felt unjustified. Like, it's just part of what's happened. I don't know. And so maybe it's a generational thing. I'm not sure. I feel like, I feel like with Drogo, like we're communicating a lot about sex. And so like, not that I'm saying like we justified it, but like, there's a lot you can learn about, like Ryan was saying, about a character, about a character's dynamics. There's a lot happening and a lot happens in sex, and it's not just like a thing to, I don't know,
be just show the audience genitals or something. Yeah. Yeah.
And also the first draft of Drogo is so much hornier, so everyone should be grateful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, these kids sound like a bunch of like Republicans back when like the parental advisory stickers came out on CDs, like with Tipper Gore going after like Two Life Crew and like fucking like Twisted Sister. It's like, you guys sound like rich, like bored Republican housewives. Like, we gotta take these swear words out of music. It's like, it's just, I can't.
could you talk a little bit about the creation of Saint Drogo? I don't know if I want to call it a creature. Would you call it a creature?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Creature's fine for now.
Yeah. I mean, it's really old human, but also, yeah, like there's supernatural elements. So like it's a creature of sorts as well.
Maybe. Like a deity.
Deity.
So how did that specific design come about? Because Brandon, you know, in the film, we see you sketching. So I would assume that if not you, someone on your team is a very good artist. So there's so many layers to Saint Drogo, the teeth sack on the stomach, the face is horrifying. So could you just talk a little bit about how you designed?
Yeah, so the Saint Drogo is a real saint, and we were looking for a saint that kind of represented what was happening in the film. Like, we're looking for like what they're the patron saint of. Saint Drogo luckily like kind of fell into place. It's like it's the patron saint of hurt animals, of like the unwanted, of disfigured people, of you know, mentally ill and like outcasts. So it's like, oh, this is actually kind of perfect. Along with this, in his folklore, he had some sort of giant growth on his side, which people believe back then might have just been like a hernia. So in the original Saint Drogo script, we had him pulling teeth out of his mouth, but we decided like, you know, like why, after a while you're gonna lose teeth, they don't grow back. So we decided to turn his little hernia into one of those teratoma tumors that like perpetually grow like teeth and hair. So now he can just kind of just pop teeth out whenever he needs to. So we went to Joe Castro, and we kind of explained what we were looking for. We're looking for kind of like a weather torn, wind torn, old, like centuries old saint, like is on a beach, like lives on a beach, on a beach town
forever. Yeah.
And then he told him to make a teratoma with a lot of teeth. And that's all Joe Castro's designs. He really knocked out of the park. It's quite beautiful.
it looks fantastic. I've asked a lot of the questions that I very much wanted to know. So we know what's coming next for you guys. Is there a timeline on that, or is that still kind of all up in the air based on funding? And
yeah, I feel, well, we've casted it, we've got our cast, and we've begun the fundraising process. We're hoping to shoot it this year. I'm gonna jinx myself, and I'm gonna be hitting myself later. I hope we can get it done in the year. Okay. Both Drogo and Death Drop took a long time. Drogo was a little shorter, thankfully, but it's the movie. Queen of the Rats is so much bigger. Like, there's so much more happening than in Drogo, and there's a lot of like very unique, fun sets that we've been like, locations we've been scouting and stuff, and getting. So hopefully fundraising the next couple months and like filming scenes we know we can do without funding. And just going from there. And then like, Ryan usually edits as we go along, so that's always helpful.
Oh, okay.
And so it's not like we shoot everything, then we have to wait like another year for editing. He usually keeps up with it, which is really helpful. Hopefully next year it'll be premiered. Fingers crossed. We'll see.
Our monster is getting built as we speak too.
Oh yeah. Our creature is getting built, which is really, really exciting. Kristen, I can't say her last name. Can you say her last name?
So she goes by Katron, but yeah, I can't remember what the last name is either. It's a tough one.
Her name's Kristen. She's worked on movies and worked with Guar, and she's fucking great. And she's building our creature, which is really, really exciting.
Oh, that's
this is a big creature too. I give her so much credit. She just sent me some photos today, and it's taken up an entire restaurant's basement, essentially.
Wow. And the restaurant is not even the set for the film. It's just a restaurant that they're letting her work in the basement.
Oh God, that's awesome! I'm very excited. Are you gonna do the festival circuit with it again?
I think we will. We'll probably go with festivals, and this is the advice that we've kind of learned and are now telling everyone too. It's like, go with festivals that you really want to be in and go with ones you have a relationship with, because a lot of them are starting to see that they can make a lot of money, and their approach and their mission statements are a little different these days. And it's kind of sad. There's still some awesome festivals that are in it that are a real deal, that actually like put their money where their mouth is and want to help filmmakers. And there's some that I used to love that are just now clearly like profit driven and like premiering A24 movies there. And it's like, A24 does not need to be in these festivals, but okay.
Just so, like, not to get like Twitter speak on here, but just like learning today that South by Southwest was taking money from like a weapons manufacturer, like weapons that are being used to kill Palestinians. I'm just like, what is going on? Sorry, I'll get off my soapbox now. But
I know a lot of bands pulled out because of that.
Yeah. I love seeing that. I just like, that was so disappointing, but not that like South by Southwest was like my fucking, I don't know, God or something, whatever. But I think that kind of ties back to how we were sort of touring our movies. Like, these festivals are expensive, and especially for us that don't have a budget, you know, they're like sometimes $40, $50, $60, $80 to just submit your film. And then when you get rejected, and this is all well and fine, but you don't get any notes. They don't tell you why it was rejected. You don't even really know if they watched it. There's not like they say they do. You have to just believe that they do, but like, you don't actually know. And so you spend like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and you get into like 10 fests. And so we'll probably connect with the fests that we have relationships with the, you know, the programmers that are supportive of us, that have been supportive of us. So we'll still do festivals, but I think we're going to probably like scale back at least some of the, applying to. We did with Drogo too. We didn't apply to as many, I don't think, but
We were smarter about it, because we really, really need a bigger budget for this film. So we're pushing really hard. We applied for a huge grant recently that I'm really hoping we get, but I think I don't want to have to like use a bunch of our money for fucking festivals again, which is just it just seems like fruitless. Like, if a lot of these festivals we reached out to and got rejected from, I sent them an email. I'm like, hey, like, can you give us any notes? We're just trying to become better filmmakers. And it's crickets. They don't even fucking email you back. It's so inconsiderate. It's like, hi, I just sent you our movie and like a bunch of money, but okay.
Yeah. And also, I think that like this whole, you know, roadshow sort of thing that we've been doing has been really fun. And I think that like, if we submit to a few festivals and then also can take some of that money that we would have spent otherwise and put it towards maybe doing like mini tour things where we're actually choosing the locations, you know, and being able to like hit up, you know, three different places in like, you know, one at one time or in like one city, wherever, that would be, I think, like a fun alternative as well. Because, you know, you're able to like find the crowd of people, like I said before, that specifically want to watch your film. And it's been a super positive experience. And everybody that we've met when we've gone to these different theaters has been awesome. So, yeah, so there's other avenues as well. And then, like, also, I think now that we're fortunate enough to have made a couple of movies, we have the connections to publications and people who have, you know, been really nice and wrote, like, awesome articles about us. You know, we can sort of lean on some of that for the wider sort of awareness and like, you know, promotional aspect of the film. And then, yeah, maybe do other non-festival things as well.
Yeah.
I completely get what you guys mean about, I've submitted scripts into like unproduced categories and film festivals, and it's usually $50-$60. But if you want to pay for coverage, it's an extra $150-$200 bucks. And I'm like, but who the fuck are you that I'm paying $200 for you to tell me why? Like, it's very frustrating. So I completely sympathize with that whole process.
I think a lot of these things are surviving on the sole fact that this is tradition. Like, this is how things used to run. It's like, you need a distributor, you needed to take these certain avenues with a script or a screenplay. Or I feel like nowadays it's like, it's just the game is so different. I think people are starting to slowly turn away from these, you know, traditions. It's been nice. I love seeing these old ways fail, because they've become so predatory and so profit driven. And I don't know, best of luck. I mean, not you, but these people doing this, like, it's just frustrating. I think they're slowly going to fade away. I think there'll be better avenues for if you're doing like scripts and screenplays, there's going to be new avenues, new ways to get that stuff out there without having to rely on these kind of people.
I would say probably the advent of Tubi has kind of been very helpful to a lot of people. Real quick, before we wrap this up, Brandon, I saw a tweet from you about a book you have coming out. White Rabbit, was it?
What the White Bishop?
White Bishop, sorry.
No, that's okay.
It's an extreme horror novel.
Yeah, it's pretty graphic. It's not like it's kind of like splatterpunk adjacent. Like I guess like how Clive Barker would be splatterpunk adjacent. It's not like one of those ones that's just so gross. Like you kind of like close your eyes while you're reading it. Which those can be fun too. But yeah, like actually, go back. What you're talking about with the screenplays. So I had written a couple of screenplays, and my friend Aaron, who co-wrote the book with me, he taught me how to novelize a screenplay into a script. As he had mentioned, that novellas and short stories actually fare better to get made into a film over like the screenplays and trying to sell a script or a screenplay. He helped me turn my screenplay into that book. It was finished a while ago, but I was on workman's comp and an injury and couldn't really sell it yet. So now I can sell it. And so April 15th is coming out. And I finished a second one that's coming out hopefully in August called Recessive Nature. That's like a fun, campy, gory 80s fantasy horror. it's a weird one. I don't know how to explain it. But yeah, it's fun. But yeah, if that's something you're ever interested in, looking into turning your screenplay into a novella, it's kind of might be another avenue. And you can also make money off of it too. If you self-publish, you can, in the meantime, if you're trying to sell it off to like to filmmakers, that's another avenue to take too.
Yes, that I'm gonna send you a message. But seriously, I can't thank you all enough for taking the time to sit down and talk with us. I've loved your films. I've talked about Saint Drogo on this show at least 10 times.
Thank you.
It's excellent. I know a lot of people are very excited for this physical release that's coming out. I will be getting a copy the day it releases.
Thank you.
And I'll put your guys' socials and stuff and your contacts in the description or in the summary. But seriously, thank you so much. And you guys are a blast. Your films are a blast. And there's a lot of people that are excited for what you're doing next.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. This has been awesome. We couldn't do it without people like you also talking to us and like spreading the word.
Find us remotely interesting to talk to. And I just want to like compliment you too. Like we've done a lot of podcasts and like a lot of them are fun and a lot of the interviews are really fun, but like it's always nice to have a podcast with someone that's like prepared. It's exciting to talk with folks that I feel like the care and like the thoughtfulness. And so I just want to compliment you. And this was really fun. We'd love to do it again when Queen of the Rats is around and stuff.
Hell yeah. You guys, I'm sending you a message the day it comes out.
We'll send you a screener.
What a conversation. I enjoyed myself immensely. I hope you all did too. And I would very much like to thank Brandon Paris, Ryan Miller, and Mike Ahern. We will have their informations so that you can go give them a follow so that you can find out when Saint Drogo releases. They have their physical release. I know I'm going to get it. I think you all should too. Support independent filmmaking. If you see Saint Drogo, a road trip, hell, if you see any indie film doing a little roadshow, go support them. It means a lot to the filmmakers, and you're going to have a grand old time. You're going to meet amazing people. So again, thank you to the folks at Monster Makeup for taking the time to chat with us. If you like what we're doing here, you can give us a follow on our socials. We have Twitter at @OfRedRum, that is OF Red Rum. Give us a follow and a rating on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, wherever you do your podcasts. We would greatly appreciate it. We're still trying to hit that 100 rating mark, trying to get that tomato certified. You know what I mean? But that being said, this has been another episode of Ruminations of Red Rum, the soup kitchen of the Ruminations Radio Network. Stay spooky, folks.